Hi everyone, it's Judy. Welcome back to the On Track podcast. Have you ever wondered the best way to protect your vias? As promised in an earlier podcast, we've brought in a manufacturing expert who is Jerry Partita, the Director of Engineering from Summit Interconnect Technologies. He's going to tell you the seven ways to protect your vias and really untangle IPC 4761. So lean in and enjoy, and I'll see you on the other side. Welcome to Altium's On Track podcast, where we talk to leaders about PCB design, tackling subjects ranging from schematic capture all the way to the manufacturing floor. I'm your host, Judy Warner. Please listen in every week and subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, and all your favorite podcast apps. And be sure to check out the show notes at altium.com/podcast, where you can find great resources and multiple ways to connect with us on social media. Thank you so much, Jerry, for joining us today. We're so glad you could join us and share some of your wisdom from inside of a board shop today about vias.
I appreciate the opportunity to share the knowledge to help our end users have boards that have no issues.
Yes, wouldn't that be lovely? That's what we all shoot for, right? So one of our listeners, Jesus Castani, I believe is, Jesus, sorry if I butchered your name, but Jesus wrote to us asking us specifically about via protection. And I know there's a lot of ways to skin that cat. So can you tell us a little bit? First of all, let's just start with the obvious. Why protect vias?
This is an excellent question. And there's decisions that designers can make that will impact cost and delivery. And sometimes it doesn't make sense why we have certain types of via protection. But I'll kind of go down the list. The document IPC 4761 covers the design guidelines on for via protection. And most of them are talking about solder mask coverage, whether you're capping on one side or the other with a liquid photo-imageable solder mask, which they don't recommend as a cap to make it sealed, although it does work most of the time with a small enough via and a high aspect ratio. And then they also have dry film solder mask coverage, which is not common, but it is used and has certain applications for it. And then there are combinations of capping one side versus the other side. It is not a good idea to cap with solder mask on one side, and we'll discuss that. And then you can have both dry film solder mask with solder mask over, or a via plugged with solder mask and capped over with solder mask or not. We have both in designs that we built for our customers. And the last one where you take a via, you plate it shut, you epoxy fill it and plate it over. Then you can do via and pad, which is type 7, which is very popular this day for high density interconnect doing type 7. But there are considerations to take for wrap plating and the amount of copper it builds up on a layer that requires epoxy filling.
Now, all of this basically is to protect the via or enable HDI, but also affects solderability issues, right? When it gets to assembly.
So sometimes the protection is to prevent solder paste from going down a via that's open to the other side of the board and causing defects or solder inside in the second, when they do the secondary side, what will that solder do? Will it cause a solder ball? As the moisture builds and explodes it out. Sometimes, and I've seen actual pictures where they use dry film solder mask on one side of the board because the board is so hot on one side, they are blasting it with cold air and it actually causes condensation and actually ice builds up on the board.
Wow.
And they don't want any moisture to go through the board. So that's like a level of protection that's extremely high. There are times they want to seal it so that then no chemistry can get in there and entrapped. So that's another type of protection from processes that we will do following on as well as in assembly. When it comes to the via protection with like a surface finish like Enig, you cannot have one side covered in a via and the other side open. As we process Enig, we have to have both ends of the hole open. And what happens is if you cover one side, you first thing you do is micro-etch and prepare the surface. The next thing is you palladium seed. The problem is the micro-etch is now stuck in this cave where it's capped on one side. And you can rinse as much as you want, but you sometimes don't get it at the back end of the hole.
Does it create a vacuum?
No, what happens is it stops the palladium. Nickel does not go directly to copper. It goes to palladium.
Right.
So you have to palladium seed the surfaces of the outer layer. But if you have a via that was capped on one side and there's some micro etch, it'll leach out in the bath and prevent palladium from seeding on your surface mount lands.
Oh.
Then you don't get any nickel.
Oh, interesting.
And you have a dark pad.
Yeah.
So we have to have both sides of those holes open. So if you do solder mask over bare copper and call out Enig, we have to open the side that you cover with mask. Even though we put everything solder mask everywhere, we leave it open, we do Enig, and then we have to go as an additional imaging, develop, screening, and curing solder mask, and it adds these extra process steps and time to build your board. But if you had them open on both sides.
And cost. Right, because it takes more time, right? An additional process.
Right, and then you have to worry about, is the via too close to a land that when we cap this, we don't bleed onto the surface mount land?
Yeah.
So so these are things to take into consideration that when you do certain surface finishes, either cover both sides. We actually have open both sides for Enig, no matter what.
Yeah, that makes sense. So, and can't you, it seems like I remember, at least back in the day when we it was practice where we put dry film over, it could cause a blowhole, right? At the heat would build up and blow the mask out at assembly.
If you trap moisture,
right? So, I mean, it seems like these days, though, a lot of people are filling with conductive epoxy and capping.
Non-conductive is primarily the...
Or non-conductive, yeah. Sorry. Yeah, and so, so conductive has sort of gone by the way,
yeah,
correct?
Yeah, and I can share some of the reasons
why. Okay, so why don't we just jump in.
So when we do what's in the IPC document, which is type 7, which is we're going to plate the hole, we're going to epoxy fill it, and then we're going to plate over it. There's a requirement that when we plate copper in the barrel that's going to be epoxy filled, that the copper wraps onto the surface of the outer layer. IPC 6012 class 3 and 2 now has the same thickness. You have to put copper onto the surface a minimum of 0.2 mm on top of the starting copper. So if your copper was 1/2 ounce, 7/10, you now have to have a minimum of an additional 0.2 on the outer layer. So it has a plate on the outer layer to the top. It's called wrap plating. The target is 0.2 mm. My hair is 2 mils thick. We're trying to target something that's 1/10 of my hair thickness. And it's a very particular process. But we don't target the minimum. We actually go slightly beyond the minimum because later on we're gonna have to planarize the surface. So when we do type 7, we do wrap plating, putting enough copper in the hole and wrapping the surface. And then we stop. So if we want 0.2, we target 4 to 6/10. But we still don't have enough copper in the hole. We probably only have about 3/10 to about 5/10 of copper in the hole. So then we stop, we cover the entire surface of the panel except for the vias that are going to be filled, and we have an opening slightly bigger than the drill, and we plate copper in the hole to the correct amount of copper thickness that we want in the barrel per your procurement document. Then when it's done, we pull off the resist film off, and it only plated in the hole, a little button, a little dot around the hole. The rest of the surface is the original copper plus wrap plating on both sides. Then after we plated enough copper in the hole, we're gonna epoxy fill in the hole to fill it, we'll cure it, then we'll sand it. The little buttons that we created, we can't have it. We wanna live in a two-dimensional world when we're imaging. So we sand off the little buttons we created on both sides, and then we go back and verify that we still have the 0.2 minimum wrap required from in the hole onto the starting copper. And if it's gone beyond it, it goes into scrap. So this is this whole process of adding plating and epoxy filling vias is typically about 8 basic manufacturing steps. And it takes a minimum of a one-day process. Typically, it's going to be about 2-day process. In production, it's more like 3 days. But you're incurring probably 20 to 25% more costs to plate, epoxy fill, and plate over your board. So if you need it, just understand it's going to take a longer build cycle, and it will definitely add cost to the board and the design.
Why do people choose to fill?
The primary reason is to get the via at the pad connection in the component. So when you're talking about high speed digital, you don't want to go to a LAN via a trace to a via, because that is all a delay. By putting the via in the LAN, there is no delay to get into the signal layer.
I see. It's a performance issue.
It's a performance issue. The other thing is it reduces the real estate that opens up for routing. So you get more routing channels as well.
Okay.
There is a slightly lower reliability in a via that is plated, epoxy filled and plated over, versus a via that's just plated on the final. And the reason for that is there's a different TG and thermal expansion of the epoxy from the copper barrel and from the laminate. So you have three different movements that are different than just a plated hole that's got air or maybe cap with solder mask. And if you do reliability tests like PCQR squared from Conductor Analysis Technology, which we've done multiple tests over a decade, you can see a slightly different cycle longevity between a through hole not epoxy filled and one epoxy filled. They will still meet all the requirements of IPC, but there is a slightly reduction in reliability when you plate, epoxy fill, and plate over. So just understand that. Another thing that you're trading off is copper foil when laminated to make a printed circuit board has the peel strength, sometimes about 6 to 9 pounds per square inch peel strength, which is really good for assembly. It survives very well. However, when you epoxy fill, you have the peel strength around where you drilled. You still have it. But where the epoxy is filled in the center, and we plate over it, that peel strength of the epoxy is probably about 2 pounds per square inch. Mm. It's much lower, and it has.
Is that because the epoxy's slick?
Yeah, you planarized it, which is a fancy word for sanding. So now you've polished the surface, and then
that's interesting.
And then you've deposited electroless copper that has no way to dig into it, so it has very low peel strength, and then you plate it on top of it. So if you do too much heat or too much rework over a VM pad with epoxy fill, you may see a bubble or lifting.
Yeah.
Don't see it too often, but occasionally you do.
So, you know, you're seeing boards day in, day out. Do you see, like you said, it's always a trade-off, right?
Right.
It's what are you trying to accomplish? What are the trade-offs? Cost, reliability, all these things come into play. Through Summit, do you see more filling, or do you just see across the board a variety of things? Like, is there a trend?
The trend is to do more and more epoxy filling.
Okay.
It is more and more common.
Yeah.
It does help with giving you routing channels on outer layers where you would have had a land, a traditional trace, and then a via. Mm-hmm. Well, if it's inside, that's a channel to now route traces. So it gives you rating routing channels, and then speed performance. Once you have that via in the LAN, you're right to the component. You don't have a delay.
Right.
So it's there's a big reason for those this being used. But you have to consider that when you add the wrap plating, the feature spacing is harder for a manufacturer, because our ability to make a space is all based on what is the total copper I'm trying to etch through, not the finished copper thickness that we'll plate up, but the base copper, which was the original copper plus wrap plating. And if you have a blind via, let's say we have a 10 layer or 12 layer, a 1-6, that requires wrap. And then you had a 1-12 with epoxy fill, that's a secondary wrap on top of the first wrap. And so you can make your base copper thicker and thicker and thicker, and it's harder to make the finer features, which is why you were trying to do high density interconnect in the first place.
Yeah, and I've seen this, again, I think as designers, not being manufacturers, you don't calculate in that additional plating. Mm-hmm. When you go into those the sequential LAM or whatever, you don't realize, oh, it's going through this three times.
Right.
Right, and you're adding little bits of copper each time. And I remember when we were in RF and microwave, I'd be like, wait, I ran simulations. Why isn't it doing this? I'm like, because there's way more copper.
Exactly.
Than you. But why? I'm like, well, you have to learn to be a board manufacturer to answer that question. So I think that's a very commonplace area where.
And in the finished product on epoxy field vias, there's an allowance of a 2 mil protrusion up or a dimple in the hole of 2 or 3 mils.
Let's talk about that. What does that do? Because I know, and I think that the machinery's gotten better, right, for the planarizing.
Yes, it has gotten better. But again, we have to go look at the geometries of the design that we receive. I have a customer that has 150 mil thick board, and they want to use a 10 mil drill. And the aspect ratio is 15 to 1.
Yeah.
There's no way we're going to fill the epoxy from top to bottom. IPC requires a 60% fill from top to bottom. And it's like, there's no way I can do it on 150 mils thick. I'd have to drill at,
right.
I should be drilling 16, 13 and a half maybe, but I will lose a panel here and there where I'm violating the 60% fill.
A panel that you're going to lose here and there, but you're going to still charge the customer for, because that's not free.
Right, right. you're paying for the risk that we're taking to build.
Right, it's a yield issue, right? So, and you can do that, and sometimes it's worth the risk.
Right.
Right, to do that.
So this takes us to the question of the conductive and non-conductive epoxy fills.
Mm-hmm.
So the non-conductive is not as thick, and we can feel the epoxy into the vias much easier with non-conductive epoxy than the conductive epoxy.
Oh, that's why we've moved away from it.
The other problem too with the conductive epoxies is they are they're really thick, so you can't get the same aspect ratio. They don't really gain you anything as conductive. And there's two different types of conductive. There's thermal conductivity, and then there's electrical conductivity. But the difference and they'll use copper or other metals in the epoxy when they fill it. But the resistance is still so high in the epoxy, the copper plate in the barrel is carrying all of the signal or all the current.
Because you have
two paths of resistance.
The barrel's doing the heavy lifting.
It's doing all the lifting because it's the lowest path of resistance by far.
I see.
And so it just goes. And so some people go, well, I want to conduct heat from one side of the board to the other. I want to use conductive epoxy. Well, the thermal conductivity of the best conductive epoxy is 16, where copper, I think, is 346 or 326.
Right.
So what I tell the customers, instead of plating 1 mil of copper in a hole, plate 2 mils of copper in a hole, and then calculate how much conductivity you have versus an epoxy field of 16.
Right.
And he'll come back, oh yeah, I will go with 2 mils in a hole. Just make sure that because we've lost 2 mils of the diameter is filled by copper, to fill it, we want to make the hole big enough that we can put 2 mils of copper plating and they'll still epoxy fill.
So you need a bigger drill, obviously.
And it's not that hard to do the 2 mils of plating in the hole wall, because all you're plating are those vias which will be epoxy filled. You're not really adding it to the surface of the board, you're just putting it in the barrel of the hole.
I see, because everything's masked off at that point, right?
Yeah, right.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a really good solution for conducting heat from one side of the board to the other.
Oh, interesting. Okay, I was going to ask you about thermal, because I'm imagining that would be a desire, right, is to
bleed
off.
For many cases, the only reason they have epoxy filled holes is they have like a QFP and a ground in the center to draw heat. And they have vias, and they want to draw the heat to the other side to dissipate. So the best bet is just play with more copper in the hole. It will conduct more heat.
Interesting. That's why we had you here, Jerry. Smart guy. So we've talked about some sort of hazards of doing it badly. Tell us a few more of those, like if you do this, then this, or tell us some war stories where it can go bad if you don't do it properly.
when we try to epoxy fill really high aspect ratio, there are times where you're like, we can't fill the type EC, which is 60% fill, but we can make the outside flat and flush. So then there's a condition that we're agreeing between the user and the supplier that we're not going to meet IPC fill, but we'll make sure it's flat and flush. And those are fine for semiconductor tests. This is really where we did it the most. We had 187 mil thick boards, 6 mil drills. Don't design that. but it was for semiconductor testing, and it had its place in the world.
Right.
But if you don't know if your via can be filled with the board thickness you have, ask the supplier. They'll look at the, they'll ask you the question: how thick is a board? How many layers? What's the via diameter I will be drilling with? And then they'll say, yeah, I could fill that, or like, no, I can't fill that. Instead of having the design and then having it put on hold and then figure out what do we do? Because it may require that you have a bigger land and a bigger drill and where it'll be possible. So if you have a board that's 125 mil thick, it may be very easy to do VM pad on the land on a 1 millimeter pitch BGA component and meet class 3. But chances are you're not going to be able to do the same thing on a 0.8 millimeter because the drill diameter has to be so large.
Right. Right. So is there anything else we need to cover as far as via protection goes? Thank you. That was really good.
I would say what's really critical if you're going to do VM pad where you're going to plate, epoxy fill, and plate over, that you understand the requirements in IPC 6012 for this section. There are particular requirements on the finished board that it meets the fill, wrap plating, and understand wrap plating. If you don't understand wrap plating, I would say contact a board fabricator that you're familiar with or comfortable with that does this, and have them explain it to you, because it's very important to understand what it takes to do wrap plating, what kind of spacing you can do. For example, you're adding 2/10 extra copper. So instead of using 1/2 ounce to start, which is 0.7 mils, go to 3/8. It's 0.5. So the extra you're adding, you can reduce the starting copper, but you'll get it back by the wrap plating.
Got it.
So there are certain things that you can do to reduce the risk or the complexity by adding it, but just know that there are process steps that are involved. It's easy to process and be out of the allowance, and then you scrap the panels and build more. But we understand the risk. Usually there's more overage when there's epoxy filled and then multiple epoxy filled processes.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much. This has been really rich. And will you share with us, I know you have to buy standards, so maybe we can link out to that standard.
Yeah, you have to buy standards.
So, go to your board manufacturer. I think my mantra, and I think in concluding here, is, you know, my mantra for many years as being a person that sold bare boards was talk to your board fabricator.
There was one more subject.
Oh, okay.
And that was encroach solder mask clearances, which is a great topic.
Okay.
So typically.
So when the solder mask is coming onto the pad.
Right.
Okay.
But not over the hole.
Right. Of course. Yeah.
This is an excellent option. Typically, you have a land of via and you drill it, and the solder mask is 2 or 3 mils away from the land. Standard. But sometimes that's very close to a BGA component. So to gain more solder mask distance or more web, you can encroach the solder mask on top of the land, but not in the hole. And so what you want to do is, if you've called out a drill diameter for the via in the land, 10, is to put an encroachment solder mask clearance of 16. So this is smaller than the land itself, but bigger than the drill. And it will any solder that gets in there will wick away from the hole to the land that you don't want to short. you can't trap moisture. You can't trap any debris in there because it's open on both sides. And it's an excellent solution. A lot of smart designers use this strategy.
Okay.
So I wanted to make sure we
That is a good point. And I do see that more and more, it seems like, which is sort of newish to me since I've been out of that for a while. So, well, thank you again, Jerry. This has been great. We really appreciate it. And Jesus and all of you listening out there, we hope that that's been helpful. And again, always be certain to talk to your board partner or manufacturer. We'll be sure to share all kinds of links and goodies with you in the show notes. So thanks again for tuning in today to the On Track podcast. Be sure to like, subscribe, comment, and like Jesus today, when you comment, we're happy to address your questions directly. So thanks again for joining. We'll see you next time. Until then, remember to always stay on track. We'll be right back.